It's Friday, October the 20th. This is Meet the Movie Press. Today we're going to cover box office, Netflix, 80 movies and $8 billion worth of content. We're going to look at the ongoing Harvey Weinstein saga and The Snowman. What the fuck happened with that? It's all coming up on Meet the Movie Press.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talks, Meet the Movie Press.
Hello, as I say, it is Friday, October the 19th. 19th or 20th today? 19th. Sorry, I went into the future. I've come back. Sorry, that was a little quick thing there. Obviously, we didn't have a show last week. I was working in Portland with Leica, and obviously, I'm still in the lead chair this week. The reason for that is Jeff Snyder is taking a little time off from the show. A lot of people in the chat and online have asked about this. Unfortunately, Jeff's mother passed away this week. She was a fan of the show. I'd met her. She was a genuinely lovely woman. So today, I would like to dedicate the show to the memory of Mindy Snyder. Very sorry for Jeff and his family. Okay. Let's go on with the show. Dimitri. Thank you for co-chairing with me this week.
Oh, again, just a pleasure and an honor to be here, and it's great to be back, and thank you for asking.
It's good to have you back. When you were here a couple of weeks ago, we had a great response, which is wonderful.
You. Thank Obviously, you, people, and thanks to everybody who watched.
People know you from Anatomy of a Movie. Let's talk about that show, in case people haven't seen that, and then we'll get into this week's show.
Sure, yeah, Anatomy of a Movie. I think, in all honesty, I think it's one of the better, if not best, show about breaking down a movie. We're not just a review show. We talk about the movies as you fans would talk about the movie as soon as you come out of the theater, go to the bar, sit down, have a couple of beers, and you really dissect movies. You talk about various scenes, and then if you're so interested and you love the movie, you'll go home and you'll see, how did they do that? Well, at Anatomy, we're that one-stop shop. We will review the movie. Mm-hmm. Each of my co-hosts, the lovely Marissa Serafini and our leader, Phil Zvitek. And then we'll get into the production of it. We get into the creative process because it's so important as to how a movie was made. And I've always found it fascinating since I was a kid buying books like the Jaws logs. How did they make this? How did they do this? Reading Fangoria. How did Tom Savini split a head in a Friday the 13th movie? We talk about it, you know, regardless of whether it's a horror movie or mystery or a drama, we like to talk about how it was filmed. So we like to talk about the creative process equally as much as we may. As much as we may hate a movie like Mother, there's still a process as to how that was made. And we'll celebrate that too.
Kind of do it like, as the kids say now, we do an unboxing.
Sure.
We do an unboxing.
Yeah. And you were part of our baby
driver. I did. Yeah, yeah, that's correct. Yeah.
So and again, I think for the audience, because you were part of Baby Driver, mm-hmm. you were there. Like, it gives a unique perspective so that even if you may not have liked the movie, maybe you'll look at the movie and go, "Well, I at least can appreciate how that was done." It's like, "Okay, the movie still sucks, but I understand how
sometimes that happens.
Sometimes, yeah.
We're going to get onto a movie that sucks this week. We're going to talk about this week's releases at the top of the show today. First of all, though, where can people find you on Twitter?
You please support me on Twitter at dmovies1701. So that's at dmovies1701. I also wanted to let you know a couple of things. I'm wearing in honor of Peanuts.
Yeah.
It's The Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown, which aired last night.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm a big fan, and cool. I'm a believer since
that's on my DVR at home. I haven't watched that yet.
Yeah, I have it on Blu-ray. And also today, I think it's worth mentioning, Bela Lugosi's birthday.
Yeah.
Happy birthday.
I don't drink wine.
Yeah. So we're in the Halloween mood. A craft brewery that I go to called Phantom Carriage. They're actually having a vintage Bela Lugosi bottle release this weekend. I'll be there tonight, and I'll go there tomorrow. And then tomorrow night, Bela Jr. is going to be there.
That's pretty awesome.
Isn't that great?
That's here in L.A., right?
Yeah, in Carson. So craft brew, and it's horror-themed. I'm in.
It's pretty much a winner.
You've got to come down sometime. Awesome.
If you like Meet the Movie Press, then you'll definitely love Anatomy of a Movie, which you can also find on the YouTube channel for Popcorn Talk.
Absolutely.
Now, I took you to see a movie this week.
You did.
One of the major releases. It's not a, yeah. It's not a huge weekend for movies this weekend at the box office.
No.
Traditionally a bit of a quiet one. It was The Snowman.
Yeah.
Now, this came out in other territories last week. It's an adaptation. It's got Michael Fassbender in the lead as a cop called Harry Hole, which sounds... That's a weird name. It sounds like it's almost its own porn parody.
Yep, yeah.
And it's basically about a detective hunting a guy who is, or a woman, who is killing people and leaving snowman heads, yeah. effectively, and snowmen at the scenes of the crime. It could have been great, right?
Well, I think, yeah. I mean, it's based off of a very popular series of books that started to become popular because it was all around that... Stieg Larsson, Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, which is extremely popular. This Joe Nesbo.
It's a Scando thriller.
It's another Scando mystery thriller, and his Joe Nesbo's is very popular. Martin Scorsese bought the rights, wanted to do this years ago. So I'll let you take the lead.
And the cast, is great. Fassbender. Michael Fassbender, J.K. Simmons, who else? Chloe
Sevigny.
Yes.
The other woman, the other... The lead
Charlotte
woman.
Gainsbourg is in there. Rebecca Ferguson is in there. It's a strong... Toby Jones is in there. It's a really good cast.
Val Kilmer.
We'll get to Val in a second. It just doesn't work on
That's
any...
behind the camera. The camera.
Scorsese, executive produced... directed by Thomas Alfredson, who did Tinker Tailor, and also, which I didn't love, but I enjoyed, and Let the Right One In. So he's a guy who's got a good track record, and obviously before that it was non-English language movies, which did very successful in his own territories. He's been talking in the press this week about the fact they didn't film the whole script. He wasn't entirely happy. There were two editors on the movie, which it reminded me, on an editing point of view, that... It was like, you know, you used to do like, what was it, was it called Chinese Whispers in school? And you'd like write one thing, you'd fold the paper over.
Sure.
Someone else would write the next line of the story, then they'd fold it over and do that. It kind of felt like narratively, and as far as the edit goes, it felt like that was happening. You were passing it to someone else without really knowing what had gone on before. The narrative was horribly choppy. The characters were so badly drawn. It was horribly miscast.
Yeah, I so far, I agree with everything you said. I mean, it was almost like getting... for you people who like to do jigsaw puzzles, the kinds that you put together in frame, it was like a 1,500-piece jigsaw puzzle and half your pieces are missing. I mean, the fluidity of this movie was just all over the map, and it seemed as if it were cut with a hacksaw. And that is unfortunate considering, like, this is more... all intents and purposes, it's Martin Scorsese's creative crew, the people that he uses.
He was originally meant to direct it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just... This is one of those things where I gotta blame the studio in some semblance, because how do you just let them go without... There's an executive who's in charge of this and who has the script, and what happened?
Well, this started out as one of the most anticipated movies of the year. It was certainly on a lot of people's top 10 lists. You know, they really wanted to see it because of the cast, because of the people involved in it. And because of the look, I mean, the trailer makes it look really, really good. It makes it kind of look like a Scando 7.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Everybody in it has British accents or very bad Scando accents, which makes no sense at all. J.K. Simmons' character, towards the end of the movie, it goes somewhere and then goes nowhere. It just stops. Val Kilmer. Let's talk about Val Kilmer. Now,
sure.
This is something that we both turned to each other while we were watching the movie. And we were like, Val Kilmer is talking, but Val Kilmer's lips don't match what Val Kilmer is saying. And it doesn't sound like Val Kilmer. Now, you sent me a link to a piece this week to say that basically when he did the movie, he'd had his throat cancer stuff.
Yeah, right.
So his vocal abilities were limited. And obviously, it was dubbed afterwards. But it didn't work. It was like watching a Scandinavian movie dubbed into English. It didn't match. It didn't sound like... The voice didn't match him at all.
No. No, it reminded me of, if you ever watch the old Mystery Science Theater 3000s.
Yes.
When they're tearing apart those movies. it reminded me this should be on Mystery Science Theater 3000 because it was that bad, the dubbing.
Yeah.
It was that bad. And I thought the technology...
It took you out of the film.
Because you noticed it.
Yeah.
And the other thing, too, I think it was one of Hollywood's best kept secrets, and they don't keep secrets all that great, folks, that Val Kilmer was in the movie. They kept him out of the trailer when his name popped up in the credits. Hey, I was like, oh, okay. And then when he showed up, he was so unrecognizable. That's when I had to go to Val Kilmer? That him? And then his voice just throws you completely off.
But also, he did not look like Val Kilmer.
No.
I mean, obviously, we know that he was undergoing treatments for various medical conditions at the time. But still...
Which I respect.
Yeah, which we totally understand, and that will happen. But to me, the obvious thing would have been if he wasn't able to do effectively half of the job, and that his character wasn't... It wasn't vital that he played that character, and with the voiceover issues and stuff like that, why wouldn't you have just recast that?
Yeah, I don't understand.
It wasn't important to have somebody who was a known actor in that role. It could have been anybody. Him playing that, he didn't particularly do a good job with it. The way they pushed his character in, there were scenes where people were talking to him and he didn't respond to them. It was almost like he wasn't there at times, but he was there in the movie. It was a very weird thing. It was distracting.
It was almost like they filmed him separately at some scenes.
Yeah.
Because you had him not responding to anybody, and then it would cut to other people talking. Yeah, I don't understand. I mean, I guess his contract must have been so ironclad. And maybe I don't know. Maybe it was something that he needed to do to make himself feel better. I don't know why you don't recast at that point. Yeah. I mean, I get it. And I'm sure the studio would have been sympathetic. And I don't know. But again, it takes you out of the movie in a comedic way. It's unintentionally funny. And you don't want unintentionally funny in what is to be a murder mystery, sort of kind of in the vein of A Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
Yeah.
If you have, like, you know, Manos in the Hands of Fate and Gorgo comes in and Torgo comes in and...
Yeah.
You don't want that.
Well, there are several characters in the movie as a whole that kind of appear and they make a big thing about them, or they do like here's a person arriving. And then they don't really either do anything with them for the rest of the movie or they never get mentioned again. So there's the guy who was doing... When he's introduced, he's doing the fumigation on Harry Hole's apartment. And they make a big thing about introducing him. They make a definite note of his appearance later on in the movie, and then it's completely irrelevant. There's Chloe. They make a big thing about her being a twin sister. And then that kind of goes away. And there's family dramas that kind of are in the background that never really do it. And then a character who's kind of been fundamentally in the background suddenly is pushed to the foreground in a so obvious way that you basically go, I see where this is going now.
Right.
And the whole thing does not...
It doesn't
work.
Fit. And it was, like I said, it's a whodunit where literally, look, I ain't the brightest bulb in the tree. I will be the first person to tell you that. And sometimes with a mystery, like a good one, like you're paying attentions, and sometimes you'll fall for the red herrings.
Yeah.
This one had so many red herrings, but unfortunately they had been left out in the California sun for like weeks because they just stunk. They were rotten.
Yeah.
And then it's a whodunit where literally a quarter of the way into the movie, you know who done it.
Yeah.
And then you're left with three quarters of the left in this movie figuring, why they done this to me? Like, why this is all? Like, I knew when it comes to the end, you're like, it. And my other biggest problem with this was a Harry Hole is a detective supposed to be one of the best.
Yeah,
all he was doing, he seemed to be the guy that was asking right questions, but he did so little detecting and he was so obtuse because literally the marketing campaign hinges on I've given you all the clues. Well, if I can see the clues a quarter of the way into the movie, why am I smarter than you? And he doesn't see the clues until literally the last quarter of the movie.
Yeah.
He's not that great of a detective. He doesn't do much detecting.
No.
And he's not that good.
No. But also, the key part of having a movie that's a thriller is that it's thrilling. And this had no tension.
No.
No tension at all. And characters that you don't care about. Nope. Because, you know, they're all great actors. But they just either badly act or the material is like, we just can't do a lot with this.
It was so
it's almost like they did the first run of each scene and they were like, yeah, take, put it in the can, next thing. Okay, let's move on. It just, it whole thing was just, it's like if they took, somewhere there's a really good version of the movie where they took all the scenes and stuff that, no, I don't think so either, but they had all the good bits that worked and they've got it somewhere else. And then they just go, like, let's take all the offcuts, and that's the film we're going to release.
Yeah.
I mean, if I was Universal, I probably would have... I would have probably just pushed it out straight on VOD.
I would have just... I would have gestated it and just...
The loss.
Like, just maybe release it in February. I mean, obviously...
All around the holidays, and people might mistake it for a holiday movie. The Snowman!
Right. Well, Michael Keaton did that already.
That's true.
But you and I also talked about... You bring up the trailer.
Mm.
You and I talked about this, too, afterwards. I don't think there's a scene that's in the trailer, which is a good trailer.
Yeah, it's a great
good trailer. It got my interest. But there's not one scene in the trailer that happens in the movie. Does that make sense? Like,
yeah.
We're always tricked, and we all,
it's a different movie. It's a different fucking movie.
Yeah.
And I'm all for not putting, like, especially with some comedy movies, they put a lot of the jokes in the movie.
Sure.
And I'm like, yeah, put a different joke in the trailer. And when you go into the movie, it's a different joke, and you still get to laugh. Mm-hmm. You don't feel cheated out of your money like you've seen it all before.
Sure.
And so I'm kind of like, yeah, so I'm in the same with thrillers. Put a bit of stuff in there that isn't in the movie. But the trailer is like a different film, and I wanted to see the film that the trailer sells, not... This, and I think they kind of, I mean, some of the Scando thrillers are very low piece. They feel very stark. They feel very monotone. They're very raw. And I think they tried to do that here, but they just made it dull and almost incomprehensible.
It lacked any
but also uncomprehensible, but also strangely fucking obvious at the same time.
Oh, yeah.
Which is quite spectacular.
Very spectacular. And it was written by three people. Three people are credited for writing the screenplay. And to me, we talked about this too, it was as if they put them each in their own, like, cabin, locked the door, and said, okay, cabin A, you get to write the first. Cabin B, you write the middle. Cabin C, you write the last act. Here's the book.
Yeah.
Read the book and adapt. Well, but when do I know when? No. Just, you're not to communicate with one another at all. Just write it.
Yeah.
And there's your script. And then they look
at the
script.
And we'll throw all the papers up in the air.
Yeah.
And then we'll take some from that pile and some from that pile and some from that pile.
It had flashbacks that, like, again, like you said, at the end of the day, a lot of them just didn't amount to anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very sad, too, because, again, the talent in front and behind the camera are people that you want to admire and you want to root for.
And even when a film is terrible like this, I mean, it's an absolute dog's dinner. There are people who put a lot of time, a lot of effort, a lot of money. This is on their IMDb. This is on their resume. And it just turned out to be a shit show.
Yeah.
So we appreciate that into every single film, even bad films, there's a lot of time and effort and money and blood, sweat and tears that are involved in this. And we're not doing down the people whose passion that is to make this stuff.
Sure.
It's just sometimes the final result goes horribly wrong. And this is a really good example. This is probably, I very rarely, even this year when I haven't been that sort of wowed by that many films, I very rarely feel like I've been robbed of my time. And I kind of, by the time I got from the Arclight to my home, I got a bit angry. And when I got home, my wife was like, what did you think of the film? And I was like, I'm kind of pissed off.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, feel free to use what I use often on Anatomy of a Movie, especially if it's a movie that was bad. I say that movie, it made me angry.
Yeah.
And it did. And the more I thought about it, it made me angry. And speaking of Anatomy of a Movie, we're going to be talking about The Snowman next week. So
okay.
I urge all of you to go see it this week.
You got to read it. No.
And then come and join the party.
Think
on
of
Anatomy.
All that money that is being spent.
Come and join the conversation next Friday when we talk about The Snowman.
Take one for the team.
But you know what, though? You know what, though? Here's the thing about movies. Somebody might actually like it.
Yeah.
And I want to hear that opposing opinion.
Yeah.
I'm not opposed. If you put it out there intelligently, because as I said on top, I'm not the brightest bulb in the tree. I might have missed something.
Mm.
If I did, it's your chance.
Well,
Go see it. And we'll talk about it. We'll break it down.
We're in a theater full of other film journalists. Nobody thought it was a good movie. Nobody thought it was a good movie.
Yeah.
So I don't think we're going to win any converts, but, and also I'll apologize, if you are going to go and see The Snowman this week, very sorry that you've spent $15 on it. If you have MoviePass, use MoviePass.
Go see a matinee.
Go and see a matinee.
Go
for the cheaper ticket. Give Universal your money, but go and see a match.
You don't have to see it.
Limit the damage.
Yeah.
And
then, like I said, watch Anatomy of a Movie. We will talk about the script because we'll talk about many things about this. So, Misery Loves Company, and I was in great company Wednesday night. It was awesome.
You know? Well, I was there, so, you know, I appreciate that, but it was me that you were with. So
there you go.
Okay, let's see what people are saying in the chat about this. A lot of people obviously offering their condolences to Jeff and his family, which I know Jeff will appreciate very, very much indeed. Sky Patterson is saying, the snowman should have been delivered on everyone's promises and hype and highest potential. What happened? I haven't seen it, but I'm hearing the reviews are mixed. I think, to be honest with you, some of the reviews that I saw last week were actually kinder to the film than I think a lot of critics over here are being. So I was going in there expecting, you know, it to be better and to be maybe they're being a bit hard on it, especially as Fassbender's kind of on a dip at the moment. But, you know, actually, it was actually worse than I think some other people thought, in my opinion. And Zeno Mara is saying, will Thomas L. Fredson get the Joss Trank treatment for this comment, or is he more established, respected than Trank for that to happen? I think that's actually a really interesting question. No, I think people appreciate his. Honestly, it won't potentially do him any work, any good. You know, it won't win him any favours in Hollywood. However, I think when you are in a situation where you know that a film that you're pushing out is going to be substandard, you don't want to go like, well, why has Thomas lost his ability to make good films? You have to be honest.
Right.
So I think there is an element of throwing kind of, you know, everybody under the bus, but you have to go, hands up, it wasn't, there's a lot of this wasn't my doing.
You know, my theory about filmmaking is because I've worked in many facets of this business in the 30 somewhat years of my meager experience, and I've worked on both sides. I don't believe that people purposely set out to make a bad movie. They happen. They just happen. Yeah. Spielberg has had his
bad
day.
Movies, like, happen to good
bad,
people.
Yeah, they really do. And it's hard. Josh Trank was fired for, I think it was a little bit about the rumors about how he was filming on Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
I think he just wasn't gelling with the Kathleen Kennedy Lucasfilm family. I just don't think he was gelling properly. And so they let him go, picked another director. Now, we said mixed reviews currently. This is right now. I was just looking it up. The Snowman, is even at a lower percentage rate than Geostorm. Geostorm has 27%. The Snowman is at a very rotten 11% on Rotten Tomatoes.
I think, to be honest with you, that's quite generous. People are asking, is this worse than Book of Henry? Haven't seen Book of Henry, but I think this is probably a lot of people are going to vie this year on their worst film is either going to be Snowman, Mother, or Book of Henry. I think that's kind of the way that this is going to go this year.
Yeah, and I would say that.
And there's a Madea movie coming out this weekend, so that's true, to be honest with you.
Well, at least the thing about this movie, it doesn't. One of my issues with Mother is that the trailers sold you a bill of goods that was not there.
Yeah.
This movie.
Which I hate.
This movie is a mystery.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, the trailer doesn't so much mismarket. You are seeing a mystery based off a Joe Nesbo novel called The Snowman, and it is a mystery. It doesn't mismarket the genre that it is. It's just not a good movie.
Well, I mean, for me, we'll move on from this in a second, but for me, the thing is that we've talked about the trailer and you're talking about it mis-selling. If you know that you filmed good stuff and the good stuff you put in the trailer, why wouldn't you put the good stuff in the final film? Because if that stuff makes a good trailer, that should be in the film. And, you know, that kind of, you know, contradicts my point about the fact that I like seeing different stuff in trailers to films.
Sure.
But if what you're putting in the final product is less than what you're selling, it's like going into a steak restaurant and then bringing you a fucking burger.
Right.
You know,
instead
you go to a steak restaurant for a steak. You don't go in there, you know, for chopped liver.
Right.
I don't know where you would do that.
And I don't want to belabor, I want to get off Snowman, but my other pet peeve about the marketing of this movie were the bus advertisements and the billboard advertisements.
Yeah.
They're all, like, you have to read them. working and being a guy that had to get the posters up in theaters, and you know, to me, posters are somewhat integral. They're a very visual medium, whether people pay attention or not is debatable in a movie theater. But your outdoor ad campaign should be visually like capture something. Don't make it so that I have to read it while I'm driving. You know, I have to deal with jerks who text and drive.
Oh, my God.
I don't want to read. And that was a frickin', like, police officer. I've given you all the clues, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, if I'm driving down a street, the last thing I want to do is look up and read. Give me a, just make it a solid visual and do not hide the title. Like, tell the title of the movie. Like, unless it was in the contract, why don't you have Michael Fassbender there? Why don't you have, like, any of the Ferguson
you,
in there?
You could have put four faces on that poster, and that would have been amazing.
Something.
Just, I mean, copy Nolan's Insomnia poster.
Yeah.
Just copy Insomnia.
Yeah.
Just do that.
Don't.
White stripes, pictures of guys with guns. Fucking title.
Yeah.
Simple.
Done.
Photoshop.
And
a guy will do it for $5. Kinko.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Don't do a black and white and then with a little snowman at the bottom, because then I'm going, if I am unawares, if I didn't see the trailer, I'm like, what the hell is this? Like, is it a movie? Like, is it a, it's a book.
Yeah.
Don't make me read while I'm driving.
It was aiming for a Snowbound 7, but it turned out to be Yellow Snow and a number 2.
Yeah.
Okay, so Snowman at the box office this week. Previews last night, it made $270,000. It's looking at a weekend of about $18 to $12 million, which is, you know, kind of more than it deserves. It's soft. Soft like the stool that it is. Geostorm is looking at a $10 million to $12 million weekend, so it's going to be between the two. By the sounds of it, and obviously by Rotten Tomatoes, Geostorm is actually... Geostorm looks like a shit movie that is fun, that knows it's a shit movie, that is going to be fun. And I'm fine with that.
So long as you know it's a
As long as you know that's exactly
movie.
What it is, grab a beer from the foyer, just go in, have fun, watch Gerard Butler being Gerard the Ham Butler, lap it up,
right,
and then go home.
Yeah.
Job done.
I don't disagree with you when it comes to a disaster movie these days.
Yeah.
However, this guy's past disaster movie... not Geostorm, it was...
The Day After Tomorrow.
Day After Tomorrow.
No, he did... No, there was another one with John Cusack.
Oh, 2012.
Okay, 2012. Yeah. Okay, there were hints of Geostorm trailer. Like, because if anybody were to ask me, oh, what did you think of 2012? I'd say it's 2 hours of John Cusack running away from a crack in the ground.
Yeah.
And that's what that is. Like, literally. A crack in the ground, and there was a crack in the ground in the trailer with a car trying to escape the crack in the ground. I like me a good disaster movie as anybody else. I grew up with the greatest of all time, Poseidon Adventure, Earthquake, Towering Inferno, and then of course
the trifecta,
the shake and bake,
and
we're all upside down. So. Geostorm, I could have a good time at, but then again, I also recognize that it could also make me angry.
I'm going to go and see it next week because my movie pass has turned up. So
sure.
It's the kind of movie that, like, my wife turned to me, we saw an advert on TV, and she was like, oh my God, that looks terrible, but I quite want to see it. And I'm like, she's a tough crowd. If she is like, that looks shit, I want to see it, I'm going to take it.
Yeah.
So we're going to go next week. Also out, I mentioned Madea, Boo 2. $760,000 in previews last night, looking at about $20 million. The first one took $28.5 million, so this is down on that, but it's kind of, you know, compared to everything else this week, it's still doing well.
Yeah.
Only the Brave only took in $305,000 in previews last night, looking at a soft opening of about $6 million.
And it has the highest rating on, on Rotten Tomatoes now.
It's just not landing with audiences, and I just don't.
Well,
it's. And it's a good cast.
It's
and
very
apparently
good
it's
cast.
Pretty good. I haven't seen it.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet either. But here's, you know, it's if you're in California, you've been dealing with the topic of wildfires now for the better part of the month. Mm. Many people relocated, dislocated, many deaths, many people lost a lot of property, wineries. I can understand if the California contingent doesn't rush out to see this. Mm. Also, it looks to be a heavy movie. I know somewhat of the story. And Joseph Kaczynski, the gentleman who did the Tron sequel.
Yeah, and did Oblivion.
Yeah, directed this movie, said that he's done a great job. But it sort of reminds me Deepwater Horizon, in a sense. With the exception that this one could be a little heavier. And I think with the state that we're in the country and worldwide, it's tough to go to see. I talked about this. It's tough to see movies that could possibly be depressing.
It is, but also on the counterpoint to that, I'm amazed that considering at the moment there is what I call PP, peak patriotism, whichever side of the aisle you're on. And these are stories like this, Stronger, Patriots Day. These are stories about heroes. We're not necessarily military heroes, but heroes of everyday American life, and audiences aren't going to see them. Now, I kind of thought that in the day where we are at PP, everybody would go and see this because you wanted to celebrate American heroes. But it just doesn't seem that when it comes to putting it on the big screen, audiences are willing to or want to go and see that. I'm a little bit confused by that.
And I understand. I see your point of view. My take on it, though, is, you know, it's effort to go to a movie. And I think right now, more than ever, more than ever, and studios should take heed of this, you know, shift needs to be taken where movies are entertaining. Mm. You must entertain your audience. And I don't care if it's frivolous entertainment. I don't care if it's like, you know, back in the 80s, Pretty Woman kind of entertainment.
Yeah.
People need to, if they're going to get out of the house and turn off their TV for whatever channels they're watching the news, they want to spend their $12-$15 and come out at least feeling good about themselves. And I get the patriotism, and there's a lot going on today. It's just hard sometimes to go see a very serious movie, even though it's about real life heroes. In a sense, you sort of kind of get a sense that real life heroes are going to, there's going to be a loss of life. And I think it's hard to take right now when we're reading and seeing so many things. I want to also talk a little bit about Tyler Perry.
Okay.
You know, listen, I worked, I was at Lionsgate for a decade.
Yeah.
Better part of 10 years. And was there from the very beginning, the early beginnings of Tyler Perry, re-released his first movie. Mm-hmm. Now, listen, I will be the first to tell you, do I defend his movies? His movies aren't made for me, and I had to watch his movies, but that's okay. You can't deny him his rabid fan base and what he did and the work that he put in to accumulate this fan base. And they love him, and they love him for a reason. He's a very hardworking man, and again, like I said, I'm not defending his movies. But they're not made for me. There are certain, like the Hallmark Channel is not made for me. But I understand the audience that it gets, and 100%. That those television movies will be huge through the ratings. When we at Lionsgate at the time, we had no idea of his popularity until we put Diary of a Mad Black Woman was his first movie release, theatrical release. We set up you could pre-buy tickets, and we set up a special line for it. I was traveling on behalf of Lionsgate, going around the country, spreading goodwill for it, you know. And while I was on the road, I was in Texas at the time, and the line went live, and within 15 minutes, it crashed. We had no idea what we were getting into. I understand his popularity. The gentleman has desperately tried to cross over with not great success. I think he's finally realized. Now, look, he was in the Star Trek movie, the 2009 J.J. Abrams Star Trek movie for a cameo, and he was in Gone Girl. Mm-hmm. And he actually impressed a lot of people. Go, Tyler Perry? But he was good in that movie.
Yeah, yeah.
And I know that he desperately wants, he really wanted to cross over. But I think with his Madea character, he knows who his fans are. They're going to go see his movies.
Yeah.
For whatever, he's a very hardworking man, and listen,
and a great philanthropist.
Very
a
much
lot
so.
Of people don't know about his philanthropic work.
Absolutely, and so I just want to say, like, yes, you can say that this movie is awful. Am I going to go see Boo 2? No, probably not. But again, I just have to say, just from working on his movies and seeing the movies with his audience, good God, like they eat it up. They love it. Again, not for me, and that's fine. That's
not every
all good.
Movie has to be for everybody.
Nope.
So that's
nope.
something we
and
accept.
His audience really, really loves it, and they'll go. So that's all, you know, just in my limited experience, again, my meager experience in
that's,
the business.
That's a fair observation. Also out this weekend is Wonderstruck, which I've heard good things about, but I haven't seen. And also Jungle, which is a small release and is now also going on VOD. It's Daniel Radcliffe's new movie. I got a screener for that. I did an interview with him for Forbes, which you can find on Forbes online, where he talks about the film. He talks about his investments in art and books. Did you know he was an art and a book collector?
I had no idea.
Yeah, no, he does that. He owns a number of properties as well. It's quite interesting. And also why he will never appear in a Star Wars movie.
He's Harry Potter.
It's basically the reason.
He doesn't
spoiler,
need to.
Spoiler alert. Yeah. But yeah, so basically Jungle is actually a really good movie. He doesn't get a lot of love for his post-Potter work generally. I thought Horns was great. You know, I've seen many other of his things, which he actually does very good, but people just don't seem that interested in Daniel, sadly.
Which it is sad, because he's
And he's
trying.
Actually really, he's really good in this as well.
Yeah, he you know. I give him credit because even when he was doing Potter, he still tried to make, you know, he tries to different, you know, separate himself from, but he still loves. I mean, Harry Potter gave him his well, what he is today, and I respect the man for doing different things. I really do. It's like the Pattinson kid from Harry Potter in the Twilight movies.
Yeah,
he too has tried to reach out and try to put himself in different kinds of movies, and I respect that because that means you're a working actor. And you're trying, and
well,
like,
that's, I mean,
eventually it'll catch.
And this is contained in the article. Actually, it's worth reading it. Basically, about the fact that he can go and do whatever he wants because he's got the Harry Potter money, and it doesn't. A lot of actors aren't allowed to do that. But it's an interesting piece. Although I say so myself, so do check
Absolutely.
It out. I'm going to post a link to it on Twitter at Showbiz Simon is where you can find me on Twitter.
And
if
one
you
other
didn't know.
Person from that, well, obviously Emma Thompson. Okay, not Emma Thompson.
Emma Watson.
Emma Watson. Yeah. But the other person too is Tom Felton.
Yeah.
Draco Malfoy. Now, he can get easily pigeonholed. He was in one of the first Planet of the Apes movie. He was a bad guy again. But he was in Megan Levy, a movie that like five people saw, which is too bad because it was really great.
Pretty decent movie. Directed
by a woman, and it was a fantastic movie about a true Wonder Woman. Tom Felton was in it, and you look at his character and you go, wow, it's so good to see him play a good guy.
Yeah.
And he pulled it off, I thought, tremendously. I was so happy for him as an actor because, like, I'm watching him in a movie and I like him. He's
agree.
Good.
Yeah.
So good.
Also, need to mention The Florida Project, one of my favorite films of the year.
Yes.
It goes wide this weekend. Thanks to filmer Jamie for reminding me of that fact. If you can see The Florida Project, really do check it out. Willem Dafoe effectively plays a supporting role, even though he's the only name in this movie. From the same guy that did Tangerine. Seriously, it's just a beautiful... It's one of those movies where things happen, but not a lot really happens. Mm-hmm. It's a fly-on-the-wall snapshot of people's lives. It's seriously, it's absolutely phenomenal. So I do highly recommend if you're going to see that. And you're looking to spend $15 this weekend at the movie theater, that's where it is. Okay, a lot of other stuff to get through on the show.
Sure.
By the way, if you do want to call us this week, we're going to open the lines, so just give us a call. Don't have to, no pressure, but the number is 424-253-0504. That's 424-253-0504 if you do want to call, if you have a question. Ideally, you'll talk about something that we've discussed on the show, and then we can talk about that more widely. So do feel free to give us a call. Right, let's talk about... Han Solo title finally being revealed this week. Solo. Now, we knew this. I mean, I everybody kind of knew this. I had it confirmed to me a few months ago because a friend of mine worked on the movie. So we were going around LA and she was wearing her cruise shirt. Every single time someone would see that, they would spaz out. So everybody knew it was going to be called Solo. The logo, though,
have
has been...
Caller. Oh,
we have,
he disappeared. Cool. He disappeared.
Oh,
we lost okay, no problem. So basically everyone would see this picture and go, oh my God, Solo, Solo. So it's been a terribly kept secret. They have tweaked the logo, though.
Yeah.
That was something that was interesting to me.
Sure.
It was out there. It was like, it's announced. And we knew that.
Great. Yeah. You know, I will...
But what else could they have called it? They couldn't have called it anything else, could they?
No.
hand job.
Oh, nice. Yeah, they could have done that way. Why not? Harry Hole and yes. hand job. So, Ron Howard, since he's taken over the reins of this, I have never seen him, tweet in social media so much so often.
I don't think that Ron Howard is down with social media.
He's been using it a lot.
He has.
And the thing of it is, it just seems that it was almost an edict saying, listen, we have to try to escape. Mm. The controversy that we had from firing those other two guys who were 90% done, and now you're coming in and we have to make it known that Ron Howard is directing the solo movie.
Yeah.
And, he's done so much of it, tweeting out pictures of the cat, tweeting out, Chewbacca and the Millennium Falcon. I give him credit for it, but they are so hard trying to... listen, I think the dogma of them firing those two other gentlemen...
Lord Millen.
Yeah, I think it's just going to hang over their heads through right up until release of the movie and possibly thereafter, unless this movie tends to be super fantastic.
One thing I was quite surprised about this week is a lot of people, when they were doing the story online, they used a screen grab of Ron Howard announcing it online. Other people used the original photo that was taken in the cabin of the of cockpit of the Millennium Falcon with Lord and Miller still in it, talking about Ron Howard directing the movie and confirming. I'm like, right, okay, Disney, what you have to do, Lucasfilm as well, is you have to take a new promo shot, you have to send that out to journalists. Because if you're talking about a film where Lord and Miller are no longer on it, Ron Howard is announcing the name of the movie. You've got Lord and Miller, or if people don't know who Lord and Miller are, you've got these two random guys sitting in this cockpit with a cast of fucking Solo. Everyone's going, who are these guys? Yeah. Come on, send a new promo shot out. Yeah. Or if you're on a website and you're doing this, don't be lazy. Get a screen grab of Ron Howard and use that to put on your story. It was something that kind of just annoyed me this week.
Well, it's
kind of like, that's
thing.
A little bit lazy.
It's lazy, yeah. and disrespectful to both parties.
Just going to raise my chair a second. There you go.
Getting a rise out of you.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
I think that it's disrespectful to both parties. If Lord Miller or any of their people, and by people, their agents, their publicity people, whatever, see this, they're going to go, they're in the picture, yet it says it's Ron Howard. It's like, look, they were famously fired off of this picture. Stop using their image of this picture.
Put it in the past. Make it a Wikipedia entry.
Yeah.
Put it down and then move on.
Because there's going to be a big deal as to whether or not they're going to get an invite to the premiere. Mm. Because right now, from what I understand, it can be proven that they filmed over the percentage, which means they're guaranteed at the premiere, and then will they go? But then it's to Ron Howard who's saying, wait, if you're saying I'm directing the movie, don't put the people that you fired on. What are you doing, Disney? Yeah. And then if you were fired, that just makes you feel worse. We're not in the movie anymore. Jerks.
Yeah, it just seems really, really weird.
Trying
to
not
me.
To swear.
A couple of people in the chat. Someone actually saying, going back to Florida Project. Filmer Jamie saying Defoe will win the Best Supporting Actor Oscar for the Florida Project. I think he's definitely going to get a nomination. He's phenomenal in that. Someone else saying they should have called it Han Solo. Nerf Herder. That's from A. Tony B. No. And Straight Edge has just joined the chat. Hey, Dimitri. Hey, Simon. Hello. So thank you for joining us in the chat. If you do want to be part of the show, you can call in, of course, obviously. Or if you do want to go to the chat when we're live, you're more than welcome to do that, and I'm monitoring that throughout the show.
I have to tell you, of the 5.5 people who watch Anatomy of a Movie, Straight Edge,
is that half a midget?
It's a baby.
Okay.
And that's because it's on in the room that he's in his crib. So
tiny arms can't reach.
So
press the button.
Straight Edge is our number one fan.
Yeah.
Number awesome. One fan, and she's been just amazingly supportive. When I see trolls, say, petition to get Dimitri off a show or something like that, she's always there. And so
I appreciate that.
We
appreciate
that. You've had issues we yeah. talked about this.
Yeah.
Rhino skin sometimes. But in any case, yeah, no, thanks. Thanks for saying hey. It's Solo.
So let's move on from Solo. Obviously, when we were on the show 2 weeks ago, because last week, obviously, we didn't have a show. I was in Portland. The Weinstein story had just broken, and at that point we didn't want to talk about it because obviously there were certain legal ramifications around that. The story has progressed somewhat. We again have to be legally careful with this because there are now police in London and police in LA are looking into criminal allegations now, as in it's an official police report that has been filed into alleged abuse by Harvey Weinstein. But there have been other areas of this story that have developed where he's been thrown out of a number of groups, including BAFTA, including the Academy, including, I believe, the PGA. There's more people today that have said that they don't want him as a member of their group anymore. Bearing in mind that, you know, he denies many of the allegations that have been levelled against him. So we have to bear that in mind as well. This story continues to grow, and more people continue to come forward and accuse him of various things, and it has opened a wider debate of abuse in the industry. And also, abuse doesn't have to be sex,
no,
rape, anything like that. It can be all kinds of abuse, mm-hmm, and it does go on in the industry. Yeah. It's been an open secret. Obviously, the difficult thing is the fact that people think that because you're in the industry and you know these things go on, you must have seen it happen. Now, you don't necessarily see, you hear whispers, you don't necessarily see the thing happen. And it's very difficult, if you don't see the thing happen, to take an action. So this, what we're doing now, is by victims, the actual people that these things have allegedly happened to, are coming forward and saying, this happened to me.
Right.
It makes it more real. It makes it solid. It makes it something that is a real situation that needs to be handled.
Yeah, and I'm glad you said that. You know, there are many forms of abuse when you walk into a workplace. There's a term called hostile environment. Mm-hmm. And my whole thing is, and I'm very, it really just flat out sucks what many of these women had to witness, endure, put up with, when all they wanted to do was work. And they would work with Mr. Weinstein because of reputation in the movies that he would produce. Mm-hmm. He was also very successful in campaigns, in Academy campaigns, and getting notoriety for that. So you understand that. The thing about Harvey Weinstein is, and again, my meager 30 years working in distribution and exhibition and production, he was a very abusive man. He created hostile environments, and I would go on to say that there were many people, male, you know, his sales team, whose job would be to get the movie into theaters, his marketing team, you know, his distribution team, you know, to walk into work and have furniture be thrown in your general direction, that is not an environment that anybody should have to put up with, mm-hmm, and anybody would have to deal to get, and to have it done in front of your peers, and to have you belittled and yelled at, you know, being put on the verge of a nervous breakdown and being afraid to walk into your office should never happen. And, you know, being in this business, sometimes it's hard to escape. I've worked in hostile environments before.
Yeah.
And, you know, you learn sort of kind of quick. And this is where I hope change happens. But here's where I really hope that it changes. Because I learned this, and that is, you know, human resources. Number one, human is in the job title. They are mostly there to protect the company, not the human. Like, if not the human that is going there to complain or talk about an issue. And what ends up happening, especially with those people on the lower rungs of the ladder, mm-hmm, whether they be assistants or, again, distribution people, if you go to human resources, you're then labeled as a complainer. You're a complainer. Whether this and this,
or trouble, a liability.
You're trouble. You're, yeah, a liability.
You're a
loose
cannon.
Then you can be let go. They will look for reasons to let you go, and then you'll have a very hard time finding another job in an industry that you might love. The other thing that really has bothered me, and again, he's just been abusive to people. He's not a nice man. But it also has stunned me that various people, and I have to point this out, I'm shocked and amazed when Meryl Streep gets up and says, I didn't know. This is a woman who called him God on the stage of the Academy Awards. you know what? Get your head out of your ass, Miss Queen. I'm sorry. That doesn't fly with me.
Well, Tarantino came out yesterday. He's been very silent on this. And he said basically, you know, he'd heard some things. He knew some things.
But you can't work in the business. Okay, so I will give you that she may not have known about the sexual follies that he was, but she knew that he treated people miserably. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. You just, like, this was not a secret in this town. If people were going to interview, I was interviewing for the Weinstein Company and people were like, you sure you want to do that? Like, I'm looking for a job. Like, you know, give it a go. Get, you know, I'll earn my stripes and then maybe, you know, whatever. People knew how bad this man was to people and his abuse. So it just shocks and appalls me that people like a Meryl Streep will say, oh, I didn't know. No, you knew, but you gave him the biggest credence. That's the other problem. This industry and other industries enable the behavior because you reward them.
But in an industry, when you want someone to fight for you, you want, and I am in no way condoning that kind of behavior at all, but when you're in a competitive industry, you want the most vicious pit bull on your side fighting your corner. Sometimes the pit bull will then eventually turn around and bite you. And it's like school bullying. You know, you want to be on the bully side because otherwise, if you're not on the bully side, you're on the victim's side. And it's a dog-eat-dog world. I'm not excusing that behavior at all.
But the behavior becomes lauded. Let me give you...
It does,
which
is not okay.
It's not okay because when you go on the stage and you say Harvey Weinstein is a god, the people who aren't in the business, who don't know the business that much, who don't know the worst-kept secret, they think that he is a god. And so there are two movies that you should watch. The Devil Wears Prada, okay? And Swimming with Sharks.
I was going to say Swimming with Sharks, yeah.
Those are two movies. Because if you watch those movies and you're an employee of that Devil Wears Prada, is that the kind of environment you want to work in? And this is the kind of environment that happens in Hollywood. I'm sure it happens in other places like the publishing realm. But this is CAA agents. Michael Ovitz had a horrible reputation for, like, but to be a mailroom person in an agency, that's where you cut your teeth and you were supposed to take that garbage and that abuse. It's rampant and it's not excusable. And when you continue to give these people awards and bonuses that are double their salary, you enable that behavior to happen. And then when people like Mel Gibson, like, it's all about money in this town. And
it is all about money, but you don't have to be a dick.
You don't.
I'm very lucky to know some of the most successful, most powerful producers, directors, studio executives, who are some of the nicest people, the most generous people, the most giving people you could imagine. And people go, what are you doing in Hollywood?
Right.
And then you get other people who are absolute monsters,
right,
and are also successful.
Yeah, but they're successful. Like, and I've worked with some amazing people.
But you make a choice, and it's the same with when it comes down to taking advantage of people. You make a choice, and people also have said, "Oh well, you know, people will do anything to get famous in Hollywood." You know, maybe some people were like, "Oh, they're asking for it." No, even if someone is saying or offering themselves up to you, you have a choice to say no. This is not appropriate.
You do.
This is not okay,
you know,
to abuse your power of position. And this is not just in Hollywood. This is whether you're working in a supermarket, whether you're working in a car showroom, whether you're working in a movie theater. It's not just the Hollywood industry that this happens in.
TV,
online, etc., etc. You make a choice to abuse your position of power. And if you do that, you cross a line.
I agree with you only to the extent that we are in this industry of dreams.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no business like show business, no business I know. And that is very, very true because some of these people, they're trying to make their bones. They're trying to, like, if they've had a lifelong dream to be an actor or an actress, or they just want to work in the business, whether it's behind the scenes or for a studio and a distribution.
100%.
Right? And sometimes you have to, like, it's you're really not given the choice, because again, who do you go and talk to? You can go talk to somebody, but then there's a time, and this is where I hope it all changes. You get labeled as a complainer, and that, instead of the abuse that'll get out there, it's, oh, well, that person complains. That person is, they don't want to deal with it. And they sort of kind of stick their heads in the sand.
And I think this is a wake-up call.
I hope so.
Because I think it is going to create a massive shift in the industry.
I hope so. Now, because I've worked with some, like you said.
Yeah, some amazing people.
Amazing people.
Wonderful people. Kind people. Open-hearted. Kind-hearted. Charitable people.
Charitable. Mentor.
Very charitable.
And to those people like Steve Rothenberg, Chachi Laprette, Joan Corrado from the Universal Office, you know, these are people that they may have had some issues, but they never abused their power.
Now, you can have a shitty day and you can be rude to somebody.
But it happens to everybody.
But that is different to being someone who is abusive.
24/7. Yeah. So you're right. I hope there is a change, and I hope that if you're in that environment, I hope that human resources helps humans in dealing with this hostility that happens in the workplace.
I've been very impressed by the hashtag MeToo. A couple of weeks ago, I commented after the show online that I've been the victim of sexual abuse within the industry. It was about 10 years ago now. It was in London. And it was a serious sexual assault. So it happens. It happens mostly to women. It happens to men as well. And I think there's a difference, I think, with men and women. Well, obviously there is, because there's men and women. But I think with women, it's a lot of people don't tend to believe them, because there's always the, oh, well, what was she doing? What was she wearing? Blah, 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 accusation, which unfortunately gets leveled, which has nothing to do. You could be stark naked. You don't deserve to be sexually assaulted.
Agreed.
It is unacceptable to take that kind of liberty. But also there's men, where the fact that a lot of men don't come forward, because it's like, I'm a man. I don't get abused. I'm the victim, you know. I'm strong. I'm not a victim. And there's that. But it does. Terry Crews came out and said just a year ago, there was a major studio executive who came up to him, grabbed his penis at an event through his trousers, and made a comment. And Terry's like, I've met Terry Crews.
Me too.
He's a big man.
And he's
you don't grab anyone's penis anyway. But you don't go up to Terry Crews and grab his junk.
No. And in fair, he's one of the nicest.
He's a lovely man.
He's so thankful for the position he's in, because he was in the Expendables movie.
Yeah, yeah. He's genuinely lovely man. So it happens to men as well. And it's the thing I think is whatever happens now, and I'll get onto that in a second. I think it's great that now people are being able to speak out. They feel they have the support for the voice, because as you say, if you're one person, it's you against David versus Goliath. Right. What if they don't believe me? What if I ruin my career? What if they never employ me? What if I get labeled as a troublemaker or someone who makes up stories or blah, blah, blah? It's very difficult. The thing for me is, and I absolutely support every single organization that has made the choices that they have over Harvey Weinstein, and they should do over other people within the industry. It should not stop here. My concern now is moving forward, where obviously there are active criminal investigations in LA and in London, allegations that have been made against him. The situation with taking someone out of organizations within the industry is, if you ostracize someone, you don't solve the problem.
Mm-mm.
When people make allegations, the next step in that is for it then to become either a civil or a criminal situation. That is the logical and the next step along this. Otherwise, it only becomes, and it remains, a he said, she said situation. It doesn't go past that.
But it's hard, and here's where
the thing is, if you ostracize, it doesn't solve the problem.
No, it doesn't.
It pushes the problem away.
It doesn't.
And if you're out of sight, you're out of mind.
Yes.
And this is the same whether it's someone in the industry, whether it's a priest, whether it's a funny uncle. You can move a problem. It doesn't solve a problem.
Yeah, and don't forget though too, we're living in a crazy. We're living in the Poseidon Adventure. We're up is down, down is up. It's an upside down world, you know. Because there's a particular person of power who there's a videotape of this particular person, literally saying how that person can sexually assault people and get away with it because of celebrityism. And the thing is, it's almost as if, again, it enables the behavior of other things and to work in a hostile environment. See, when you talk about accusations, it's hard for an assistant or maybe a salesperson or whatever who gets a piece of furniture thrown at them. How do you later on prove that? Like, yeah. Other than the witnesses who may be in the office, it's like, so you can accuse this person mm-hmm. of doing this. Maybe it's written in a book. But again, when you go to human resources, there could be a file on him the size of War and Peace. Mm-hmm. And it's that file is there so that the company insulates itself and that person gets separated, segregated out. I just want there to be abuse is abuse. It should be stopped. It should not be condoned. Do not, like, what they're doing to Harvey right now, this is what's hurting him the most, in my dopey opinion. He's no longer going to have that seat at the Academy Awards. Mm-hmm. He'll no longer be able to, or an influencer in Cannes. He's not going to get to go. He doesn't have his favorite table at Spago. He's lost all of it. No more. You know what his big, plus being it's kicked out kryptonite. Of the Academy? No more screeners. Get no more screen. Like, the prestige things. He'll be kicked out of the golf course that Weinstein Company paid for. Mm-hmm. Okay? These are some of the richest people in the business, and yet they give everything is given to them through the company, whether it's their country club membership fees, and then their bonuses. Yep. And this. That's what's going to hurt him the most, because those are all signs of power. And when you can't go to your favorite restaurant without a reservation and just walk up and, oh, Mr. Weinstein, please come on in. And
yeah.
When you're at the Academy Awards and you're persona non grata and you don't have people kissing your ring anymore, that is what is going to dig the deepest. And they say he's in therapy. It can't be long enough.
No, I mean, absolutely. I mean, we'll see. I mean, we'll see what happens in the future. But, you're absolutely right about that. This is his kryptonite.
Yeah.
And the same to anyone else in the industry. You lose your status.
That's it.
You become normal.
Yeah.
You become normal again.
Yeah. And he's still going to be able to live off of his millions.
He's not going to have to worry about
whatnot.
Money.
And so it's just, I want the abuse. I want the abuse to come out. The sexual abuse, the abuse on people, the male assistant, whoever it is, hostile work environments should not be tolerated. And those people should have a voice.
Yep.
And they should be protected.
And now they feel they have a voice.
I hope so.
People aren't alone. They're standing together.
I hope so.
A couple of questions in here from the chat. A. Tony B. says, do you guys honestly think that this scandal will change Hollywood? Honestly, A. Tony B. says he doesn't think so. Do I think it'll change Hollywood? I think, like, unfortunately, many things. I think, like, racism. I think, like, war. I think, like, sexism. It will never disappear completely. But I think what this will do for Hollywood is we see you to abusers. We're not afraid of you anymore. If you do this, you will now potentially be outed. This won't be a secret. And in California, there is a... I don't know if you saw this in the news at all. There is a motion that's been put forward to stop settlements for claims of sexual abuse. You won't be able to pay people off mm-hmm. and make them sign an NDA now if someone accuses you of sexual abuse, which I think will make a big difference. If that passes, will make a huge difference, because you can't make these things go away.
Yeah, you can't make them disappear.
Because that does happen a lot. A lot of people, they do take the money and they go, because it's sometimes easier than going. I wouldn't want to go through a court case.
Right.
I can't imagine how horrible that would be.
Yeah.
So people do that. So that could come to an end.
And who's the onus on again in that court case, right? So you got to go through that embarrassment, and then you have to have them literally dissecting you in front of the world, and they're trying to discredit your character.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, you work hard. Mm-hmm. Good character, good people. You know, I work hard. I like to believe that I was brought up knowing my right from wrong and have good character. And to have somebody who's abusive to take that, you literally take that away, and it becomes like the abusive wife syndrome.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you want to go back to work and you don't want to have a problem, so you try to appease that person because it's you have a job, and it's a job that you dreamed about getting. And you trying to make it work because it's hard to find a job.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, it's the battered wife syndrome. And I've been there. It's a miserable situation to be in. I hope you're right. Will it change everything? No. But to your point, at least the eyes become a little bit wider and open to it.
Yeah.
And maybe, just maybe, for those other abusive predator people out there, maybe it makes it a little bit harder, because maybe now people will think, whether they're male or female,
yeah,
to open up their, to do something. Maybe they do have some protection.
Well, in response to A, Tony B, Tony Hat said in the chat, B, I think it will, but for people outside the industry, we won't see any difference. It will change for those inside for the better. And I think, John, I think that's really, really good. He says, or at least he hoped. No, John, I think you're right. Xeno Hours asked me, to fix this problem, doesn't Hollywood need to admit their history was built by sexual abusers, like everyone from Harvey Weinstein to Louis Mayer? The industry wasn't built on abuse. Abuse was a byproduct when people have power. And like I say, it is endemic in Hollywood. It is a big problem. We've always known the phrase the casting couch. I've done a lot of stuff for TV and radio over the last couple of weeks. The casting couch is something that was bandied around, almost like a joke. It does happen. Unfortunately, whatever industry you're in, whether you're running a gas station, whether you're running, for president, I mean, Bill Clinton, he had an inappropriate relationship, right. And so it doesn't, it's not just the Hollywood industry. No.
There are shitty people, pardon my French, there are shitty people everywhere.
The priesthoods. These things, it's not just Hollywood, and it's not, the industry was built on abusers. It enabled abusers, and now the wheels are starting to turn, which will make that less so. Okay, so also, Zeno, Harvey Weinstein's treatment of others and trades should have been enough to get him thrown out of the elite status. Well, the thing is that, just being a dick,
arrogant, work that way.
It doesn't work that
no,
way.
No, because he got, because the Academy.
If it did, people, Hollywood would be empty.
Well, Hollywood voted. He's won many an Academy Award. Look, what Miramax did in the independent world, still to today, it reinvigorated it, it changed the world of distribution of independent movies,
and he made some great movies,
right? And there were some great movies, and his brother as well.
Can't deny that.
And they made them evolve. Yeah. They had Dimension. They had horror movies. I was just watching H2O, Halloween H2O. His name's on that. It was a Dimension film. Miramax made so many movies. And I was I did, in a sense, work under Harvey Weinstein and the Weinstein Company, or Miramax, because they felt Miramax, we had to release Fahrenheit 9/11. Mm-hmm. Lionsgate did. Because Miramax, owned by Disney felt that it might be too hot of a movie.
Yep.
No pun intended. So they made a distribution deal with Lionsgate to release the movie. And I had to supply a report weekly as to where the trailer was, where the poster was shipped to, where it's up, give it to them. They would by order go check, even though we hired checkers as well. And, Monday could be a very miserable day for me.
Yeah.
I would hear, the trailer wasn't up, Harvey's doing this. You understood. But nobody should have to deal with this. No. But the industry does enable it, because they do. Look at Mel Gibson. The guy makes Hacksaw Ridge, gets nominated for Best Picture. And they enable the behavior and they allow it to happen. And they have to sort of kind of stop.
Well, we're seeing a swell for a tide. So
yeah, it's a good way to put it.
Let's hope this will at some point crash on the shore.
Mm-hmm.
We have to be clear at the end of this that the allegations that have been made against Harvey Weinstein, many of which he denies, have yet to become, or may not become, criminal prosecutions. So that's the current. These are allegations at this point. We have to be very clear on that. Let's move on from this now.
Okay.
Appreciate the feedback in the chat. It's really good to have a debate about this.
Yeah, absolutely.
It is a wide topic, and we do appreciate it.
Thank
you for doing that. And thank you for also keeping it civil. A lot of people online over the last couple of weeks have just been making spurious and outrageous and quite ridiculous comments. But it is really important to have an intelligent debate about this.
Yeah, and I want to thank you for allowing me to get on my little soapbox, too.
No, it's true. So it's important to have all these different viewpoints.
We've had experience in this, and I'm sure many of your viewers and listeners, too. Again, this is not just indicative of this business. Mm-hmm. It just gets out more because it's Hollywood. It happens in every type of business. And some people who watch us because they're fans of movies, they do something different. They may have been witness or privy to something too, regardless of what they do.
Lend an ear, take some time, do what you can do where you can do it. Yeah. It's really, really important. Mm-hmm. The other big topic I want to talk about, we're being wrapped up at the moment, so we've got just got a little bit longer.
We've been
almost an hour. Netflix announced this week that they're looking at spending $8 billion on content and approximately 80 new movies. To be honest with you, the quality of the Netflix new movies. I mean, $8 billion in content is fantastic. That is a really nice, tidy sum. And they're really upping the number of subscriptions at the moment. They're really on a roll. Figures came out this week. You know, we're now, Nielsen are going to be able to give more of an idea about who is watching what for how long and how regular, which is going to be invaluable. Mm-hmm. It's going to be invaluable to some people, and it's going to be a nightmare for other people who've kind of been making stuff that isn't up to standard and coasting along because they know Netflix will buy it. And it's kind of more pressure on them, which I think will increase the quality. But 80 new movies over the next couple of years, I think is a really, really good amount of movies. That's not, for large movies, that's not far off what you would expect for, you know, a national release.
Right.
Which is good.
If you're talking a bit, well, number one, now I understand why there's been a rate increase. Mm. So $8 billion will do that. Here's my thing about Netflix. Like Ted Sarandos, they so want to be big players in Hollywood, and they already are as far for what they do. But he wants bigger. He wants to be theatrical. He wants to be considered for Academy Awards and stuff. My only advice, suggestion, you want to hire me, that would be great. Play by the rules, sir. Don't, like, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. I don't think it's broke, but you want to keep on breaking the rules. Like, Amazon at least plays by the rules of the theatrical window. So if they get nominated for an Academy Award, I'm all for it. But, sir, you can't go day and date. You're cheapening your product. And I don't care how great a review you get. If your movie is going to be showcased on Netflix and then we're going to put it in two theaters, you're cheapening your product. And just open up a distribution department. Just play by the rules. You want that Academy Award nomination. You want to put a ton of money into making movies and getting a great script and great actors. Go for it. Do it. But just play with exhibitors. Just make sure that people go to the movies and make sure that when that movie comes up, Netflix, produced by Netflix. Mm. That's the best advertising that you could get, and you're playing by the rules, and then when it comes Academy time, people won't poo-poo your stuff. Don't cheapen the product that was made specifically for cinema.
Yeah.
When you're, you know, and I got nothing against your streaming stuff. Your Marvel stuff has been a ton of fun. Your comedy specials are amazing. Just if you want to play in the big boy, you want to play in the big screen, make it for the big screen, release it theatrically, get a talented distribution team, set up Netflix Studio. That's what Amazon is.
Yeah.
Maybe you don't want to because they've already done it. But hey, you want to be legitimate movie theater stuff, make it for the movie theaters, stick to 90 days, and then you have it. It's your product. Then you can push it out on your Netflix. It's your stupid thing to stream.
No, that's, I think, all. I 100% agree with that. I think where this is really going to come into its own is the fact that it could potentially prove a really good breeding ground. We're always talking about diversity and new talent on the show for people to come through and make movies of a good quality on a small budget. Now, we've seen Blumhouse have absolutely nailed this, and we've seen again very recently with Happy Death Day, movies of $5 million, which is not a huge amount for a movie, but then they're going theatrical and they're making a shitload of money. If we can see the quality of some of the stuff that, say, Blumhouse is doing, and other studios, for $5 million, put that on Netflix, they will buy it for $10 million, and they will get rev off that as well. You're laughing.
I'm not laughing. Look what Manchester by the Sea did for Amazon Studios.
Yeah.
Nominated, Casey Affleck wins, you know, best actor. Mm-hmm. You played by the rules, Amazon, and look at the attention that you got for Amazon. Mm. Netflix, you can do the same thing. I agree with you. Make micro-budgeted horror movies. I don't care.
Yeah.
Get great. I mean, I don't know how much Manchester by the Sea cost. $10? Just, you could make great movies. advertise it, play it, play them in art houses, let them expand, let them grow, let people find them. And then in 90 days, Netflix, you get to stream to your heart's content. And then come Academy time, if it's worthy enough, you get nominated. And then it says Netflix, a movie produced by Netflix.
People in the chat saying, has any studio ever released 80 films in a single year? No, I'm talking about sort of major blockbuster movies. That's no, what I'm looking at. So no studio has, I don't think, certainly off the top of my head, has released 80 movies a year. And this won't be 80 movies within 1 year. This will be over a period of time.
It's probably about 8 years. I mean, your average is about, depending on the studio, it's about 10.
Yeah.
A studio like a Disney will release.
So we're talking 10. About tier A and tier B kind of movies, not the sort of the stuff that's small, indie, et cetera, et cetera. We'll take those out of the picture. Right. We're looking at sort of major studio movies. Yeah. So sort of $5 million and above.
Absolutely.
John is correct in saying that Neil Turritz actually wrote a great piece about Netflix on Tracking Board, the site that Jeff is in charge of a few weeks ago. Netflix needs to fill an unlimited amount of airtime. That is true. I think a key part of the success, aside from quality and, you know, the subject matter of movies that they put out there, and obviously the talent that it attracts as well, is the navigation on Netflix, which is a major bugbear for mine. I'm a big fan of Netflix.
I'm the same thing.
It is horrendous. There is so much great content in there, but trying to find it is like trying to find a needle in a haystack. It is one of the worst organized interfaces. Another key thing, I think, is going to be publicity. It is actually surprisingly difficult to get access to talent for some of their movies over the last couple of years, I have found. So I think adjusting their publicity model, adjusting their, from an editorial point of view, and I think from an advertising point of view, I think is really going to, but like you said, we managed to buy the seat. When that became considered a proper movie because it's theatrical, it changed it. I think maybe Netflix need to do a couple of movies where they are theatrical movies that get people realizing that Netflix are really what I call normal people outside of the industry who realize that Netflix are making these movies. They're not movies that have gone straight to VOD. There is a difference.
There is a major difference, and you need to prep the audience.
Yeah, and I think to get them on board with that and understand that, I think will be a really, really key part.
And that's where your publicity comes in, too.
Exactly. You know, I think that's really, really important. Because a lot of people think that stuff that lands on Netflix that is actually a Netflix original movie is something that was a studio movie that bypassed theaters and effectively the old day would have gone straight to VHS. It's not. No. It's a movie that is made specifically for a platform, like a Channel 4 movie would be made in the UK, or a BBC Films movie, or something like that.
No, absolutely.
So like people need to understand that difference.
What was it called? Warhammer? The one with Brad Pitt?
War Machine.
War Machine. Yeah. My apologies. Like, that was made specifically for Netflix. Mm. Did you see Brad Pitt anywhere? Was he on, like, Good Morning America?
One thing I noticed recently, I was in Portland last week, and I'll get to that in a second before we finish. But I noticed that my wife actually pointed this out quite recently as well. You see in LA, and you see in other major cities like New York, Chicago, etc., you see a lot of billboards.
Sure.
You see a lot of bus sides. Yep. You see a lot of things on benches. Mm-hmm. I was in Portland. I saw hardly any advertising for movies, TV, etc., etc. And sometimes we forget that if you go outside of our bubble, the LA bubble or the New York bubble or wherever, normal people who are outside of our little community, and which is very small when in comparison to the rest of the United States,
absolutely,
they aren't facing this content in the same way that we are. They don't spend all day going on blogs, going on Twitter, etc., etc. There are people that I know who are normal people who, sometimes I'm talking about a movie, and I've been talking about it for months, and that's like a week before it comes, I go, oh, I see blah, blah, blah is making a new movie. Right. Like, it's just the start of the process, and it's due to come out.
Right.
There's something not quite right in that model, and people are consuming it in very different ways.
Yeah,
the days of page-wide newspaper ads advertising a movie, where it'd be like, say, Snowman would be a big piece in, like, the LA Times with the show times at the bottom and coming Friday, the anticipation over a week. That consumption of advertising has changed.
Yeah, no, that was my favorite. Growing up, that was my favorite thing to do on Sunday, was go get the arts and entertainment. But you're right, and we are hypersensitive to it here in Los Angeles. You have to understand something, too, and I get it. When I go home to Boston, I still will see, like for the holidays or whatever, I'll still see some billboards, but it's just not as intensive here and or New York. The reason being is because the business is in these markets, mainly, It's ego driven. There are reasons why certain billboards, like you'll notice, they're placed for, and they're always the same company.
Yeah.
It's 9 out of 10 times. It's because the executive drives by that every single time.
You can go 20 minutes outside of LA. You can go up to, say, where Six Flags is, like half an hour, 40 minutes. Yeah. Completely different. That, you take one road off the freeway, and you're in farmland.
Yep. Oh, I worked in Ontario.
Yeah, that's what happens. We forget about this. Off my point, talking about the difference between films that are made for Netflix and those that people think of just weren't good enough for theatres and have bypassed and gone straight. Zaya said, I thought those straight to Netflix movies were like the straight to DVD or Lifetime like movies. I didn't know the difference till now. Thanks, Simon. So there is this confusion. And this is someone who engages with shows like this, Anatomy of a Movie. And then there's some confusion over how this works. And these are people who are clued in.
And so. I think that's in large part because of Netflix. It all lands on their shoulders. All they have
to do is educate the audience. Take it to them. Explain it to them.
Really
tell them what you've got. Mm-hmm. You could open a store in the middle of LA, but if nobody knows you're there, you may as well not bother.
Yeah.
You've got to sell your product like a shop.
And sell it like a movie.
Yeah.
Sell it like a movie. Release it in theaters. And trust me, if your movies are good enough, people are going to go, and they're going to get it, and they're going to go, you know, Netflix.
If your movies are good enough,
they'll say,
make good movies.
But they'll say, you know what? Netflix makes a good movie. And then when they stream it, then they're more apt that they'll go back and they'll might see it again because it was a good movie that they had a good cinematic experience at the theater. Just play by those rules. That's all.
Really good example. Snowman would have been great if Universal had owned that. Put it on Netflix as a Netflix-only movie. That would have been something really quite special. They could have sold it to Netflix, made quite a lot of money, then had revenue off the back of that, sold advertising around, etc., etc. Would have been cheaper than the expense of everything else.
I get that.
Share the advertising expense.
Sometimes when you're into a movie, it's by contract. This movie is going to go out on X amount of screens. I'm not saying that the contracts can't be modified.
Yeah.
But usually when you're setting out, this movie is going to go on 2,700 screens and whatnot.
Film Nerd Jamie has just said in the chat something that I was actually thinking just yesterday. Bright is their big gamble, a film that would normally be a big theatrical release. That is the one with Joel Edgerton and Will Smith.
Right.
It's Men in Blue, basically. Men in Blue is what it is. I'm genuinely really excited about Bright. I'm really looking forward to that movie. It looks great. It reminds me of movies like, The Hidden. What was the James Caan movie that then became Alien Nation.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Men in Black. It reminds me of that kind of movie. Yeah. And I'm really, really looking forward to it.
And here's the other thing, too, about Netflix. We're talking Netflix.
Yeah.
There's no way that... there's no way you can monetize. Mm. All right, so say Netflix comes out and said, hey, we just spent $20 million to make Bright. Mm. Well, they're not part of the box office top five on Sunday. Like, there's no way to monetize, or at least they don't release to us. Like, there's just no way, like, how do they make money off of the 20 million? Is it by views? Is it by their subscription base? Like, we're in box office. Mm. That's
well, just it's something I consistently, it's a question that I ask everybody that is a producer or a director that I interview for Forbes. I asked this with Sean Levy recently.
Yeah.
And the guys at Foxtail, Matt Malik, and everybody else. I asked Joel and Dave at Mandalay about it when I interviewed them for Stronger. And I've got a few interesting interviews coming up in the next few weeks. And I always ask them about this. What is your opinion, and where do you see it in the industry, and where do you see the money being made, and what are the pros and cons of that? I mean, the fact that Martin Scorsese is now deciding that after Silence, he's pulling away from studios and he's going to release his next movie on Netflix does change. He's an old school movie director.
Yeah.
He makes his movies that are cinematic movies to be shown in a theater on a big screen with all the bells and whistles.
Sure, absolutely.
He is going, I'm going to put my next film on Netflix, and that tells the industry something really important. Before we move on to trailers, I want to touch on those quickly before we finish.
Yeah.
A Tony B says, what about Oakshar? Really good example. I saw that it was released, a limited release in some theaters. I saw it at the New Beverly. I thought it was fantastic. I think if they do more like Oakshar, but they do things like, say, Bright, and they release it on a certain number of screens in key cities, then they can do that as well as that. Do that 2 weeks. Use the Inhumans model from IMAX. Release it in certain cities for 2 weeks, either in IMAX or on a regular screen. Get some money off the back of that. People who can access that and will want to pay and see it on a big screen will do that. Then the rest of the time, you need to then put it on Netflix and everyone else can watch it.
But your key word is people who want to. Again, to have the movie business thrive, and by the movie business, I do mean the cinematic experience.
Yep.
I'm all for the theatrical experience.
But a lot of people, first and foremost, normal people, don't care. They watch movies on their phones.
I get that. I understand. Mm. I'm trying to propel and push the movie-going business, because that's what I grew up loving. Yeah. I didn't have an option until the 80s where video cassette came into sell-through market. But what I'm going at is, if Bright is such a good movie, right, it's this big movie, then give it a chance to make... Don't leave money on the table. Mm. You know, advertise it. Put it out there. Let it... 90 days today goes by like that. It goes by like that. And if the movie can make money theatrically, right, and you can count for that money and say, Bright did really well. And then if it gets good reviews, then look at that. Look at how that machine turns. And then when it's on your streaming service exclusively, and then when you can sell the Blu-ray for something that you're streaming exclusively, then the machine works. Then everybody makes money. And it's just not put onto, I don't know, to me, it just cheapens the product where if Bright is as good and as it may look, it should be on the big screen. That's all. And I'm not saying that streaming services can't make good movies or TV. I mean, look what AMC has done. Look what HBO has done. Mm. Right? But my question to you is this. If you took Game of Thrones as it's filmed today and put it on a big screen, it's not going to look as good.
Well, this is something I spoke to Sean Levy about, because Stranger Things Season 2 starts on the 27th. It looks amazing, by the way. I spoke to him about the fact, could we see, they use Game of Thrones, they put it on IMAX for, you know, to introduce a season. And I said, could we see a season start or a season end on the big screen for Stranger Things, put it in theatrical for a couple of days? He's open to that. So we could see this kind of transitioning. It's on both screens. You know, we start things off on a big screen, we move them onto the small screen, we have a different edit that's available on Netflix if you want the fuller version, director's edit, you see it in theaters. There are lots of things. I think this will develop as a model as it moves forward. I think currently, just to get the content there and the perception of what it is, it's not an also-ran. It's as good as. It's just on a small screen.
You know, I understand, but again, it just doesn't look the same.
No.
Why? Because you need different cameras, you need to make your sets bigger, you need to change things from a cinematography level so that it fills that space, and it does not look cheap. And Game of Thrones looks fantastic on HBO, and I have a 65, 70, whatever. I have a big screen, flat screen TV, so all that stuff looks great. The Expanse and science fiction and supernatural looks great. But if I were to take that show, and I've seen Doctor Who in the big screen, it just doesn't... Okay, I see it on the big screen. It just doesn't look as good.
Okay, trailers next. A, Tony B, OMG, Stranger Things Season 2 on the big screen. Shut up and take my money in caps. Tony. Okay, it won't be Season 2, but read my interview with Sean Levy. we're possibly tying the idea of maybe Season 3 starting off with a big screen premiere, possibly a season finale. Don't know, just ideas. Take your blood pressure meds, sit down, breathe, don't get overexcited just yet. It won't be for Season 2. Dude, I want it as much as you. Breathe. We'll get through this together. We'll get there.
Well,
we will get there.
Paying attention.
Okay, so a couple of trailers before we finish that I want to touch on. Black Panther came out early this week. A lot of people were very excited about this online. You've watched it.
Yeah, absolutely. A couple of times.
Yeah.
Sure.
I mean, I'm unbelievably excited for this. Not just because I'm a fan of Marvel generally, and Thor Ragnarok, by the way, absolutely nails it. Reviews came out this week. I did a piece for Forbes ranking all the MCU box offices to date. You might want to check that out. This is a movie that I'm looking forward as a Marvel movie, but also it looks great as a movie on its own.
I think that's where Marvel excels.
Yeah.
And it does look really good. I mean, I'm looking forward to it. They know how to they know how to make superhero movies, and they know how to market them. I mean, it's Disney now too, but yeah, no, they cut a really good trailer. And what they always focus on, and this is what folks, and I'm sorry for you folks that really love the Justice League trailer. What's lacking in that trailer that's in Black Panther trailer is there's a semblance of story in the Black Panther trailer. Like, I'm getting that there's a story.
Got to agree with you on that.
I mean, if you can't cut a trailer and tell me exactly who your villain is and what the stakes are and who they're fighting against, that's an issue. But Black Panther and the Marvel movies, they always do a good job of setting up, this is the story. Thor Ragnarok, they not only give you the money shots, but they're telling you without spoiling the movie what I'm going into. And their movies are always seem to be centered around story.
With every DC movie, I'm going into Justice League looking forward to it. Again, I'm hoping for... I'm not expecting Wonder Woman. I'm hoping for something more like Wonder Woman than Suicide Squad. Let's see how that goes. Staying with superheroes, the New Mutants trailer, or teaser trailer, effectively dropped this week. I personally... they're looking at doing a trilogy, kicking off with this one. I like nicely
too.
Dark.
Yeah, sure. It looks really good. We were talking just before we went live about, I said that it sort of kind of reminded me a little bit, teeny bit, Robert Rodriguez is the Faculty. But yeah, a little bit dark. Here's my thing though. Let's make one really good movie that makes good money before we start thinking trilogy. Let's I hope they just focus on making the one movie and then go, aha, we have a hit. People liked it. And then we'll talk about making a sequel to it. So, but it looks good.
Yeah, I'm liking it so far.
And I really like it's a relatively fresh cast. I like that.
Yeah.
I really like that. It won't take me out of the movie and gives me new people to like.
And I think it's quite nice because I think Fassbender's a great example. We're seeing a lot of people that we're very familiar with, very popular actors, very able actors, doing a lot of projects they really shouldn't be doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's great. They could have put anybody in that lead role. I would love to have seen someone fresh or just Skarsgård. Alexander Skarsgård could have hammered that. He could have nailed that home. Would have been a home run. Even in a terrible film, he would have still been a shining light. Fassbender, very, very dull. The third trailer is Wonder. Wonder looks just superb. It's about a boy with a facial disfigurement. It reminds me of Mask. You know, the Cher and Eric Stoltz movie the 80s, which I love. I'm really looking forward to this. I do love something that is kind of a weepy drama.
Yeah, I mean, one of my favorite movies of this past year was, speaking of superheroes, the Chris Evans movie Gifted.
Superb movie. Criminally underlooked in movie theaters. That is on my top 10 films of the year.
And this had hints of that.
Yeah.
It also had hints of... there was another movie outside of Mask. It was a Jodie Foster, Little Man Tate.
Yes.
Had hints of a Little Man Tate in it, too. I'll be curious to see how it plays out. You know, these movies can go either way. Mm. They can either be inspiring and feel good, like Gifted, or they can be Hallmark Channel, like just movie of the week. They can go either way. I hope it's more on the Gifted side of things.
Yeah, because people that go and see it.
Yeah, and I hope, if it's as good, people should rent Gifted because it is so good. And if you want to see Chris Evans outside of Captain America and the rest of that cast, it was just amazing. And again, I walked out of the theater. I just felt good. I was like, not only did I see a good movie, I was like, I just felt good about the outcome, about everything. So this movie... I hope that he could live up to that, because that's what I want today. I want to feel good coming out of the movies.
Here's a fun fact for you. One of the first people that was spoken to about directing Wonder was Paul King, the director of Paddington.
Really?
Paul King was approached to direct that.
Well, why didn't he take it?
Don't know.
Paddington 2?
I don't know. Hey, I'm excited about Paddington 2. I love Paddington. Genuinely excited about it. Okay, so those are the trailers this week. Now, the reason that I wasn't here last week was because I was working with Leica in Portland. I mentioned this a couple of times on the show today. It was in association with the Portland Art Museum. They've got a Leica exhibit that started last Saturday, and it runs until early summer, spring next year. I've done a piece on it on Forbes. I'm going to plug that in there as well. That was a preview piece. It's an amazing exhibition. They have got... I did a walkthrough. I was there to do a live Facebook live for them. It's about 20 minutes long. If you want to look at it, it's on the Leica Facebook page. It's also on the Portland Art Museum Facebook page as well. It was a fantastic experience to do it. Things from Box Trolls, Coraline. Really? They've got from Kubo. I speak to the guys behind the massive sort of skull character from Kubo. They've got that 16 feet tall. It's absolutely huge. Awesome. It's amazing. You know, all the movies they've got there. Paranorman, some great stuff from Paranorman, that's which I awesome. Love.
Me too.
I love that. So it's really good. If you're planning to go to Portland, you really should check that out. Check the video out online.
Is it going to be a traveling show?
That is what they're looking at doing. Okay. That is what they're looking at doing. And Scoop. Scoop, there's more about this on the video. I talk about this with the SFO, Brad Wold from Leica Studios. They are currently very far into production on their fifth film.
Nice.
With an announcement due soon on what it's about, what it's called, and who the voice talent is.
Oh, that's great. That's amazing.
I know some stuff that I can't tell you. But they're heavily into production on that fifth film.
Good.
So there will be more on that very soon.
Good for them. I like a good competitive...
And they're doing, again, you know, Leica, they keep breaking the mold. No pun intended. But they keep breaking the mold on the industry, and they're doing something with this next film that has never been done before.
Really?
In stop motion animation.
Fantastic.
So it's something completely new that is they're really pushing the boundaries on the techniques and the technology they're using.
We always, we've broken down a lot of their movies on Anatomy of a Movie, so I always look forward to it. It reminds me, like, Pixar had had an exhibition that was wonderful, and I hope it travels and maybe comes down to, and I hope it comes down to LA. It would be a great take.
It would be fantastic, but if you can, for the time being, go to Portland. It could also be traveling around the world. More on that at a later date.
Awesome.
Okay, so Dimitri, thank you for joining me again.
Thank you for having me.
Where can we find you on Twitter?
At dmovies1701. Please support me on Twitter. Thank you very much to your audience for allowing me to sit here, because it is, you know, it's an audience-driven thing, and I really appreciate you asking me. It's a privilege to sit in this chair.
Well, it's great to have you on again. I really appreciate your time. Thank you. Again, so much to talk about. Really, really appreciate it. Hopefully there'll be a show next week. I'm going to try and fit it in. I'm a very busy Friday, and it involves Mila Kunis and me going to Denver. So we'll see if I can see if we can make it work.
Mila Kunis, but hopefully, and going to Denver.
I know, not with Mila Kunis. I don't want to start. Sadly, I mean, I'm very happy. It's with my wife, but this has now got really awkward. This is now. Totally gone off the rails. Really awkward. Dimitri, thank you so much indeed. If you like the show. What a way to end. If you like the show, please subscribe, share it on social media, tell everybody you know. We really appreciate it. And we will be back very, very soon. Well, I think that went very, very well. Thanks, Dimitri. That was fine.
That's what I'm here for.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of its owners or principals.